Huey slept little that night. He rolled out his blankets in the shed and lay on the floor, his eyes wide open in the darkness. In his frustration and anger, he lashed out at various people in his mind. At Snort Yarnell for starting the escapade that led to trouble. At Fox and his three hired toughs for breaking Walter's leg. At Walter himself for mixing into a fight that was not his own. He made these rounds a dozen times, but each time, at the end of it, he had to come back to himself and accept, for a little while, the blame upon his own shoulders. He could have said no to Snort and ended the whole fiasco before it started, but he had joined into it with whole heart and empty head. No matter how he rationalized it, and he tried, the ultimate fault was his own. So was the ultimate responsibility for salvaging whatever was possible out of a deplorable situation. He might have dozed a little, or he might not. He was smoking cigarettes and staring at the ceiling of the shed when the first light came. His stomach hurt as if a cold lump of pure lead lay in the bottom of it. His eyes were as blurry as if he'd been on a three-day drunk. He got up and rolled another cigarette, which seemed only to burn his tongue. He rolled his blankets and trudged toward the house when he saw smoke rising from the chimney. Eve was in the kitchen. They exchanged a quick glance apiece, but neither had any words. It was just as well, he thought. If she had any, they wouldn't be pleasant to listen to. They'd be a repetition of the ones he used against himself all night. Huey poured a cup of coffee and started out the door with it.
I'll have breakfast ready directly.
Eve's voice told Huey she hadn't slept either.
Thanks, but I need to go and look things over.
Huey saddled Biscuit and set out on a round, surveying his problem. He found it worse than he'd anticipated. The frequent rains had been good for the growth of the feed Walter and the boys had planted, but they had also been healthy for the weeds that were always trying to take over. Normally, in this region, where rainfall was usually light, a farmer could raise a crop of feed without the weeds getting bad enough to cultivate, provided he planted on good, clean ground. Walter had no cultivator. Those cost money, and he owned nothing he could do without. He did own some strong hoes, and he had a couple of boys who knew how to swing them, whether they enjoyed the work or not. It was going to be a mean job to get ahead of the weeds and stay ahead. It might take a mean man to push the boys and keep their noses to the grindstone. Huey could have been a straw boss or even a foreman on several ranch jobs if he'd been willing to take it upon himself to supervise other men and get the maximum work out of them. That kind of drive had never been part of his makeup. He had always preferred to stick to cowboy wages and keep his friends. He grimaced, surveying the start the weeds had made. The boys were likely to be calling him something stronger than Uncle Huey by the time this crop was made. The thought made his stomach hurt worse. His relationship with Eve was not true peace, not by a long way. At best, it was a cold and silent truce. But at least it was silent, except for her accusing eyes. For the next 2 or 3 days, Huey made it a point not to look into them more than he had to. He never went into the house except to eat, and he wasn't eating much. Alvin Laudermilk always had horses and mules that needed breaking. Huey set the boys to hoeing the feed, then rode over to Alvin's and made a deal on price to bring a string of animals to the place and break them here rather than at Alvin's. The facilities were not nearly so good, but the convenience of having them here counted for a lot. In the first days, he needed someone to help him catch and hackamore and tie and saddle them. He alternated between Cotton and Tommy until he decided Tommy was somewhat better at it. Cotton's inclinations ran to the mechanical. When he was through with Tommy each morning, he sent him on out to join Cotton at the field. Twice a day, Huey put the Bronx through their paces. At other times, he went out to help the boys, or he rode among Walter's cattle, looking for cases of screw worms that needed treatment. He had a raw mule snubbed to a post and was bringing up a wagon with a tame mule hitched to it when he saw a buggy coming at a brisk pace on the road from town. The boy's black dog always barked at Huey every time he rode up. But he didn't bark at the buggy. He trotted out to meet it, tail wagging. Huey knew the occupants by the way the vehicle listed badly to one side from the poorly balanced weight. They were C.C. Tarpley, Whippoorwill Finn, and Fat Gervin, packing 50 extra pounds of pure hog lard. C.C. was driving. He never trusted that to Fat. Tarpley almost hubbed Huey's wagon as he came up alongside it and stopped. C.C. stared at Huey in surprise. Fat didn't look at him at all.
Howdy, Huey. Thought you'd be in Mexico by now, or Canada, or some other damn place.
None of them, C.C. This is home.
Maybe you're taking a step toward reformation after all. Or maybe it's just age. Always seemed to me like age has reformed more people than religion.
Speaking from personal experience, C.C.?
I ain't reformed. I've just turned some of my romantic responsibilities over to a younger generation.
C.C. glanced at his silent, simmering son-in-law. Huey read between the lines that the old man knew things Fat had assumed he hadn't found out. C.C.'s gaze shifted toward the house.
Mighty sorry to hear about Walter's hard luck. How's he coming along?
He ain't chasing any rabbits.
I come out to see about that. You know, the bank, that is, has got a lien on this here property. I was counting on the obligation being met this fall. Now I can see that it won't be. I thought we better be getting a man over here to see after our interests. There's a crop out yonder we can't let ruin, and there's cattle that need caring for.
It ain't your interest yet, C.C. That obligation's gonna be met.
The old man didn't seem to hear him.
And there are the mechanical works. Walter has two windmills that need looking after, and...
We'll meet that obligation.
We? You said we?
Me, Eve, them two boys, us.
Now, Huey, me and you have known each other longer than either one of us wants to talk about. You may think right this minute that you're gonna stick, but I know better. One morning you'll see a rainbow and go riding off after it. You can't any more stay here than you can flap your arms and fly.
I'm staying, C.C.
Fat Gervin had been staring at the black dog, skewering him with an evil gaze. The black dog looked back and cheerfully wagged its tail, assuming friendship where none was offered. Fat turned to Huey and put in an unsought opinion.
You won't stay here 3 weeks.
Huey glared at him. C.C. turned and cut his son-in-law short with a hard glance that made him shrivel, if a fat man can. When men were talking, boys didn't stick their bill in.
You won't stay here 3 weeks. You'll never see a bundle of cane cut or yearling delivered.
I'll be here.
If you're still here this fall, I'll kiss your ass.
I'd rather have Fat do it, if it's all the same to you.
Fat showed a flash of anger, then his eyes turned little and gloating. Huey shoved his hands into his pockets to keep from doubling his fists. Tarpley was a greedy old man with narrow ways, but at least he was open and basically honest about it after his fashion. Something about Fat Gervin reminded Huey of a coyote sneaking around looking for a way in when a man wasn't watching. The old man started to flip the reins, then thought of something.
Almost forgot, Huey. We get the San Angelo Standard at the bank every week. Thought you'd get a kick out of the article about you and Snort.
C.C. pitched Huey the newspaper. The buggy rolled off toward town.
You won't stay 3 weeks!
The dog trotted after the buggy, wagging its tail as if imploring them to stay. Resentment glowed as he watched the buggy retreat. But resentment presently took a backseat to curiosity. Huey unfolded the newspaper, searching. He found the story on an inside page, circled by a pencil mark. Disappointment touched him. It was the first time he'd ever read his name in a newspaper. Seeing it misspelled shook his faith.
The festive spirit engendered by the big steer open contest here extended a bit further than many of its jovial participants expected, with the net result that one man took home a broken leg as his prize and a local sport spent a night as a guest in the county hotel, later enriching the public coffers at the kindly suggestion of the judge. The set-to was initiated when two lads of the Limberloop took a front at the automobile herding activities of one Jay Fox, a member of the city's sporting community. Having done none too well in the afternoon's hemp-twirling contests, these daring cowboys headed and heeled the automobile belonging to said Fox. When that gentleman complained vigorously about their prowess with the lasso, one of these knights of the range proceeded to hogtie him in the fashion normally restricted to the steers. This fun-loving cowboy was, according to public record, one Hugh Calloway of Upton City, that fledgling metropolis to our west. The other was the redoubtable Snort Yarnell, late of San Antonio, and any other point you might choose to name. This was, by all accounts, a crowd-pleasing affair, roundly cheered, and the two lads acquired many admiring new friends by their feat. However, it did not please the said Mr. Fox, who, according to officials, sought redress in the form of blood. He hired three husky and fearless fellows of our nocturnal society to exact the payment. In the course of their attentions to Mr. Calloway, they bestowed the wrath of his brother, whose name we were unable to discover, with the result that he attempted the rescue of his kinsman. In the ensuing unpleasantness, his leg was broken. The authorities were sent for and calm restored. The three hired revengers have remembered urgent business in other climes. Mr. Fox spent a restful night as a guest of Sheriff J.S. McConnell and paid his compliments next morning, along with $50 and costs to the court, on a charge of malicious mischief. He also is said to be considering a removal of his business ventures, whatever they may be, in the very near future. The cowboys have retired back to the range to consider adding one more event to the next roping competition here, namely car roping.
Eve came out of the house and worked her way down to the front of the barn where Huey had resumed his activity with the wagon and the bronc mule. She stood back out of the way, for she knew the havoc a raw mule could create. When Huey volunteered no information, she ventured a question.
What did CC want?
Huey didn't look her in the eye.
He came to take over.
He's a little early, isn't he?
Well, that's the view I've taken of the matter. I told him this place still belongs to the Calloway family.
The Walter Calloway family.
And it'll stay that way. I gave you my word, Eve.
Eve turned and walked back toward the house. Her shoulders drooped. Huey watched her, his face furrowed. She had all but given up already. If her loss of hope became contagious, he was going to have a hard time pushing the boys enough to get the job done. But he would do it. By God, he would do it. Huey turned back to the mule, which was fighting as he attempted to bring it into the traces. Gentleness had always been his way with horses and mules, but Huey slapped the mule alongside the head with the flat of his hand.
Settle down, damn you. You work whether it pleases you or not.
West Texas was never an easy, benevolent land. For whatever it yielded up, it exacted a price. The most common price was drought, which put to severe test the endurance of those settlers who dared accept its challenge. In the uncommon years when rain fell plentiful, as it had been this year of '06, the tariff imposed in other ways. There were the weeds that sprang up and thrived, robbing water from the crops upon which the homesteader's toenail hold was based. And there were the insects that seemed to explode by the millions after a rain. In particular, the homesteaders faced the screw worm. The creature brought death of a slow and agonizing kind to animals wild and domestic. The screw worm fly thrived in warm and humid weather. It was attracted to any scrape or cut that brought warm blood to the surface. This could be a man-made wound, such as a castration cut or a peeling brand. It could be accidental, from running against a rough tree or a barbed wire fence. Or it could be natural, like horn gouges incurred in fighting. In newly born calves, the flies attacked the bleeding navel and set death's time clock to work in the very same place where the umbilical cord had given life. The flies laid their eggs, which soon expanded into a wriggling white mass of flesh-eating, screw-shaped worms that gorged themselves and drew more flies and grew in numbers until death put an end to the animal's torment. Every cowboy carried worm medicine, usually in an old cut-off boot top tied to his saddle. In this stained and odoriferous makeshift case would be two bottles or cans, one of chloroform for killing the worms in the wound, the other of cresilic ointment to smear on afterward as the healer and fly repellent. It was a bloody, smelly, unpleasant chore, and a constant one, for every day that an animal went untreated made crippling or death a greater probability. Each morning, early, Huey went through a self-imposed quota of work with bronc mules and horses. That done, he set out a horseback to ride over the Calloway's 8 sections, 8 square miles, watching for screwworm cases. If he saw a cow lying down while the others were grazing, he took that as suspicious. If he saw one retreat into the occasional motts of heavy brush, he rode in after her, for an afflicted animal usually seeks solitude and shade. He made it a point to ride up close for a thorough look at every small calf, for these were the most vulnerable, the quickest to die in bewilderment and pain. Much more often than he would have liked, he found screwworm cases that needed doctoring. It was one of the heaviest infestation years in his experience. Every time he found one, he knew the graveling feeling that he was probably overlooking another somewhere nearby. Moreover, when he doctored a case today, that was no assurance that he was through with the animal. A raw wound could reinfect swiftly despite the chrysalic ointment. It was hot, sweaty, exhausting work. For usually, he had the boys assigned to the fields, and he had to do this job alone, roping the infected animals and doctoring them where he found them. It gave him an opportunity to ride some of the Laudermilk's broncs that had advanced to the point of some cowwork schooling. On the other hand, roping was difficult on a bronc because it always took time for the animal to get over its fear of the lariat. Caught in any bind, it was likely to pitch, or at least to run away, perhaps dragging a caught calf at the end of the rope. It was a dangerous job, but Huey knew it was necessary. He would need every dollar he could earn from Alvin or anyone else. Often, his search for worms gave him no chance to come in at noon and eat. He had missed many a meal in his time, but he didn't mourn. But some days, he seemed not to have the stamina he had always taken for granted. Times he came in from a screwworm hunt and faced another working out of broncs in the late afternoon with little energy or enthusiasm. The fields were a critical problem. Huey rode a sorrel bronc by the field one morning and saw the boys working close together, evidently talking, moving somewhat slowly through the cane. He swung down, tied the hackamore rein to a fence post, and strode purposely through the field. It seemed the weeds were growing faster than the boys could get around to them. Huey walked up to Tommy and grabbed the hoe out of his hands.
Damn weeds are gonna grow right up your pants legs if you don't work faster than that!
He chopped 15 or 20 with a flare of anger he couldn't rightly explain, and did it rapidly.
There! That's the way you chop weeds. You don't love them to death, you whack them down, and you don't take all day about it.
Tommy stared at him in surprise and dismay. A few feet away, Cotton was chopping, but his eyes were on Huey.
Another thing, you boys been talking instead of working. Cotton, you get yourself on down yonder, way down yonder. I want you where you can't even holler at each other, much less talk.
Huey pointed, and Cotton quickly moved to comply. Huey thrust the hoe at Tommy.
Take it now. See if you can earn your keep instead of leaning on the hoe.
Huey walked back and got on the bronc, using the spurs when it seemed a little reluctant to go north the way he wanted it to. He looked back once and saw the boys bent over, working in earnest. That night was another of his sleepless ones. Lying on his back, he listened to the night sounds. Over and over in his mind, he went back through the way he jumped on the boys. He kept seeing their surprise, their hurt faces.
Oh, that's not me. That's not the way I am.
But he knew that if a similar situation and similar stress were to come up again, he'd probably act the same. Eventually, he dropped off into fitful sleep, only to be confronted by C.C. Tarpley and Fat Gervin. He opened his eyes and found himself in a cold sweat, the faces still clear in his mind. Fully awake, he began picturing Walter and Eve and the boys leaving this place. Walter lying in the back of a wagon, helpless, the family's few belongings piled on either side of him. Eve and the boys crying. Over to one side, in their buggy, would sit Fat and C.C., watching in smug satisfaction as the plum fell off of the tree and into their laps. Walter, if lucky, would wind up working for C.C. again on patched britches pay, and Eve would again be cooking for two C's cowboys and getting no pay at all. He hammered his fist on the floor.
It's not gonna happen. I ain't gonna let it happen.
But the nightmare played itself over and over in his mind. He made the rest of the night on Bull Durham cigarettes. The nightmare was still playing when he pushed to his feet and walked to the shed door to stare out into the cool, damp dawn. That morning he rode by the windmill that bore his name and heard it squeaking when he was still 100 yards away.
I told those boys to grease the thing.
Eclipse Mills needed a greasing at least once a week. Twice was better. He found and doctored several cases of screw worms, reluctantly turning the cattle loose because there was nothing else he could do with them, knowing half would probably have to be doctored again. By the sun and by the gnawing of his belly, he knew it was well into afternoon when he rode by the field to see what kind of job the boys were doing against the weeds. He didn't find them there. He looked up at the sun and took another guess as to the time. Knowing boys and their hunger, he doubted they had just now gone to eat. They should have had dinner an hour or two ago and been back out here hoeing down the weeds that kept springing up anew, threatening to outgrow the feed. His shoulders ached from the work and the loss of sleep on that hard shed floor. He was hungry, yet felt no particular pleasure at the thought of stopping to eat. There just weren't enough hours in the day. Those two boys were wasting the ones they had. Resentment smoldered in him. He knew it was a childish feeling, but it persisted in spite of his efforts to put it down.
Damn it, I can't do it all by myself.
Approaching the barn, he heard hammering and reined the bronc toward the sound. Under the shade of the lean-to, he found Cotton hammering some lumber and pieces of steel together. Tommy stood behind him, looking on.
Boys, them weeds out yonder are getting ahead of you again. You better quit this shade and go back to work.
The hoes are too slow, Uncle Huey. We're falling behind. What we need is a go-devil or some other kind of cultivator.
There ain't money for such as that.
I'm experimenting, Uncle Huey. I think I can take some scrap and make us something that'll do the job without costing us a dollar.
When you say experiment, what you mean is that you don't know if it'll work or not.
Cotton looked at him, catching the implied criticism.
I think it might.
And again, it might not. But I know what will work, and that's elbow grease and a good sharp hoe. If you feel like you've got to experiment, do it at night when you can't see to use that hoe. Right now, you two drag your butts back out to that field and get busy!
Reluctantly, Cotton laid down the tools and the lumber and the steel sweeps he had been handling. He didn't look Huey in the eye, but started toward his horse. Tommy quickly followed his brother's action. The pet burro tagged along after Tommy. The boy turned and walked back into the shed. He came out in a minute with a bucket partly full of oats.
What you doing with that feed?
The burro is hungry.
Those oats are worth money. That burro ain't been working for his keep, so he doesn't get any oats. Save those for the working stock. Turn him out in the grass. Let him hunt for his feed.
Huey turned away.
Here, Huey. Come on, Huey.
Huey stopped and looked back.
I didn't think that burro had a name.
He's always had a name, but I didn't use to think it fitted him.
Eve, tired and harried, turned from the stove as Huey entered the house. She wiped her hands on her apron, more out of nervousness than out of need.
I put some dinner on the back of the stove for you, but I don't know what it'll taste like. It's been there too long.
It don't matter. I ain't hungry anyway.
Hungry or not, you've got to take nourishment, or I'll have you laid out in there with Walter.
I'll just take a biscuit and a piece of meat. I gotta be getting after them broncs.
Eve slipped the apron from around her waist and slapped it smartly across the corner of the table.
I said you'll eat, and by God, you'll eat.
Surprised, Huey pulled out a chair and sat down at the table.
First time I can remember you ever being so concerned about my welfare.
First time I ever had to be.
After he had eaten, he walked into the bedroom where Walter lay with his leg propped up.
How you doing, little brother?
Terrible. I wish I was up taking care of things.
Well, you ain't, and you won't be for a while. So you just lay back and let me take care of the work and the worry.
Huey started to leave.
Huey, the boy's been a little downcast lately. You sure you're not riding them too hard?
No harder than I have to.
They're just boys. I wish you'd go easy on them.
Fat and CC won't go easy on them. They'll throw them off this place the same way they'll throw you and Eve off. I'll go easy on them boys when we've finished our job.
Huey rode Bronx the rest of the afternoon. After supper, he went back to ride one more before dark. He took it on a good circle, tiring it mercilessly to work out any inclination toward pitching. As he returned at dusk, he heard hammering again at the shed. He unsaddled the bronc and staked him where he had been before. Then he walked to the lean-to. Cotton was again working on his contraption. Tommy was again watching interestedly from just out of his brother's way. Huey could feel the boy's uneasiness. He studied Cotton's design, trying to figure out how the boy intended it to work.
You, really think that contraption will cut wheat?
I think it will.
Huey watched a little longer, then walked into the shed and got a kerosene lantern he'd been using. He lighted it, carried it outside, and hung it from a nail up under the lean-to roof.
Well, then you better have some light. You boys will put your eyes out trying to work in the dark.
Spring always rode straight-backed and proud, with the ease of a woman who has spent much of her life on a side saddle. Her paint horse was gentle enough, but it was no lazy pet. She demanded a standard of performance from him and got it. Riding along, Huey was looking at her rather than at the landscape. He had seen this part of the country 100 times. The wide flats, the low hills didn't change. But spring seemed fresher and younger and prettier every time he saw her. Perhaps, in part, it was the contrast between her and Eve that made it so. This summer was being extremely hard on Eve. Spring pointed.
Yonder it is, the Barcroft place.
Huey pulled his gaze away from her and turned to face forward. Somehow what he saw did not bring a rush of excitement to him. He saw a 3-strand barbed wire fence, reasonably tight, with a wire gate where the wagon road went through. He had always suspected these treacherous wire gates were designed to keep the women folks at home. A lot of women couldn't open one without tearing a dress or half-breaking a jaw on the discarded wooden hames invariably used as a boomer to pull the wire tight. 200 or 300 yards beyond the gate stood, or sat, or maybe crouched, the small boxing strip house the settler named Barcroft built to live up to the requirements of the Texas homestead law. He had not expected it to last forever, but it had needed to last at least 3 years to satisfy the state. From here, Huey would casually guess that it might still have another 3 years left if the wind didn't get too strong. In front of the house stood 2 small and lonely-looking chinaberry trees.
I always like trees.
I'm partial to them myself.
Huey wished he saw some. He got down and opened the gate, pulling it back and letting it lie loosely on the ground because there were no cattle here to get out. If any got in, they were probably welcome to the grass.
To begin with, it has a good stout outside fence.
Huey swung back onto Biscuit and looked behind him. He had never decided when he went through a fence if he had the feeling of going in or going out. Something about a fence seemed always to choke him a little, to cut off the flow of air like shutting a door into a room.
Well, at least I won't have to build one.
Riding to the house, Spring spotted the small bachelor garden.
That will be easy to expand.
She pointed farther west.
There's a nice little field over yonder. You could expand it a little every year till it was a good-sized farm. You'd hardly even miss the grass.
Huey nodded, making a show of agreement. From here, he could almost see across the whole claim. C.C. Tarpley had horse traps bigger than this.
Since he's moved out already, I don't think Mr. Barcroft would mind us going inside.
That was her way of inviting him to help her down from the saddle. Huey got down, and as he helped Spring down, she touched her lips softly to his cheek, catching him by surprise.
There. I did it to you before you could do it to me.
I'm keeping track. I always like to square up my account sooner or later.
Anytime you want to.
The wanting boiled up in him, and he felt a wicked impulse to rush her into the house and then see just how much she was willing to abide. But as they walked through the door together and he looked at the place, the wanting ebbed out of him. It was all in one room and not much of it. Kitchen, bedroom, the whole thing. The walls had been covered with old newspapers instead of wallpaper, mainly to keep the cold air from blowing through the siding and the blowing dust from filtering in quite so badly. A small stove was the only piece of furniture. It had been left only because one leg was broken off. Ashes lay black and cold on the floor.
It would need some brightening up.
The house dampened her spirit a little too, but only for a few minutes. Soon they were back outside again, and Spring was stepping off rough plans for a yard fence and a flower bed. Huey stood slump-shouldered and tried not to let his feelings show in his face. He looked around in silence and thought of a time he once spent in jail. Then he thought of all the improvements Walter and Eve and the boys wrought on their place. Huey tried in his mind to transplant them to the Barcroft place to see if it could be bettered. Before long, he was back at what he enjoyed most, looking over the Bronx staked out to teach them respect for the rope. He picked a sorrel that had developed considerable tolerance for the saddle.
There now, fella. You're looking good.
Talking
today.
Softly, he Easy walked now. Up to the doubting bronc, holding his hand out in front of him. The horse grunted and pulled at the end of the rope, then leaned back on its haunches. Relentlessly, Huey moved his hand up the rope to the hackamore, then up the side of the horse's head, and back out onto his neck.
That's it. You're gonna be just fine. Easy. Easy now.
The pony trembled a little, but gradually relaxed and let up on the tension of the rope. The tenderness Huey never felt free to express to a woman, he always felt free and easy in expressing to animals, especially horses. He spoke to the bronc as if it were a child, an advanced child.
Whoa, son. Whoa. See there? I ain't fixing to hurt you. Just wanting to love on you, little. You're a pretty one. Gonna make somebody a fine cow horse, if I'm any judge. Like to have you myself, only I got all I can afford.
He rubbed on the pony's neck, gradually letting his hand move down to the shoulder. The skin would ripple a little, a showing of fear. Huey would back off, and then he would return. And when the ripple didn't show, he'd go farther.
That's it. You're a good fella. Yeah.
It occurred to Huey finally that, in a way, he was substituting a horse for Spring Renfro. He didn't know whether to laugh at himself or be ashamed. He'd been so wrapped up in the pony that he hadn't noticed the approach of a horseman. The man swung down from a blue roan and peered at Huey through the corral fence.
Well, Huey, I see you ain't lost your touch. I don't know which you're the best at, handling horses or roping automobiles.
Huey saw the gold tooth shine in a grin that stretched as wide as a single tree. The heaviness lifted from his shoulders. He trotted eagerly toward the fence with his right hand shoved way out.
Snort Yarnell, I wouldn't have thought about you for a dollar and a half.
I ain't offering. I ain't got a dollar and a half.
They shook hands through the fence. About that time, Eve came out onto the front step.
Supper!
She saw the blue roan horse, and she saw Snort. Even at the distance, Huey could tell that she sagged a little. She said something, and Spring Renfro came out. The women stood together, watching the two men walk up from the barn, slapping each other on the back. Snort removed his old greasy hat and bowed slightly to the women.
Howdy, Eve. You're always a sight to my sore old eyes.
He shifted his attention to Spring Renfro.
Well, I'll swoon. I'll just bet you're the pretty school teacher that's turned Huey's head.
Spring was too embarrassed to know what to say.
Oh, I don't think Mr. Calloway's head has turned too much.
You'll have supper with us, won't you, Snort?
Eve's eyes were saying she hoped he wouldn't. Snort didn't seem to read eyes very well.
I'd be much obliged.
Eve would be hospitable if it killed everybody. A little stiffly, she pointed to the washstand.
Y'all can wash up over there.
The words were directed at both men, but they were meant especially for Snort. Snort visited a little with Walter in the bedroom, then came out to the table. He visited very little with anybody for a while then. He was too busy eating woman's cooking. For a man who had no interest in permanent alliances, he always made top hand at the table any time he was privileged to eat in a woman's house.
You heading any place special?
Snort nodded, going after the cobbler pie.
On my way out to the KC outfit in the Davis Mountains. I'm going to pick up some horses and take them back to old man Dotson on the middle concho. Thought if you didn't have anything to do, you'd like to go with me.
Eve spilled half a cup of coffee. Huey rubbed his tired shoulder. He thought of unbroken bronx and wormy cattle and weedy fields. And of the Barcroft place. Travel seemed a grand idea. Huey happened to look across the table at Spring and catch the sudden concern in her eyes.
I'll bet you never been out to that place, have you, Huey?
Not right there, no.
Oh, you ought to see it. It's all mountains and canyons and wide, pretty valleys with clear blue creeks running down through them. If the Lord was ever to get heaven overstocked and start looking for a place to branch out, He couldn't do no better than them Davis Mountains. They're a feast to the eyes and the soul. I wish you'd come and go with me.
Huey remembered the times he had seen the fear in Eve's eyes when he was telling Walter about some place he had been, urging him to get away from here a while and go somewhere with him. Spring's eyes had that look now. He took a long, silent sip of coffee and tried to keep his growing disappointment from showing.
No, Snort, I got more work here than I can see around. Yeah, I reckon I'll have to let you go on without me.
Huey had made a round looking for screwworms, and as usual came by the fields to see how the boys were doing in their constant battle against the weeds. The black dog came running out to bark a challenge at him.
You just keep it up, you devil spawn. Think I didn't hear you the first time?
To his surprise, he saw a mule working in the feed, Cotton following close behind him. Huey rode up to the turn row, hooked a leg over the saddle horn to show the bronc he wasn't afraid of him, and waited.
You know, dog, if you had half a brain, you'd know which side your bread was buttered on and be more loyal to the folks helping you out. Instead of the ones trying to take your bread away.
The dog gave him a haughty look that told Huey to mind his own business. In a few minutes, Cotton came out to the end of the row, following the mule-drawn contraption he'd designed and built. Tommy trailed behind him with the hoe, giving the coup de grace to any weeds Cotton had missed or left wounded.
Boy, does that thing really work?
Cotton made a cautious, tentative smile.
It's no go, devil, but it cuts weeds.
The evidence lay behind him in the row he had just finished. Huey marveled at his nephew's ingenuity.
Well, it ain't much for pretty. Any honest-to-God farmer was to come by, he'd die laughing.
While he's laughing, we'll be cutting a good, clean crop of feed.
Huey looked across the field. The cane was soon going to be ready to harvest. He dismounted and stood there a little, studying Cotton, until the boy self-consciously turned away. Huey put a heavy hand on his shoulder.
Cotton, I've been hard on you boys. I ain't real bright, so the chances are that I'll do it again. But if I ever fuss at you about taking time for an invention, I want you to hit me over the head with that contraption there.
I hope you'll remember that.
I probably won't, but you remind me.
Uncle Huey, you reckon when we get this job done and the crop all in, you might talk to Mama about me?
You still thinking about that job in San Angelo?
I lay awake nights thinking about it.
Your Mama doesn't take much stock in what I say. You'll need to ask her yourself.
I have.
What did she say?
You can guess what she said.
The dog looked up, lifting its ears, and then went trotting out on the trail that led up from the house. Huey saw a familiar buggy, this time with a lone occupant.
Damn.
Fat Gervin.
In the flesh. There's a hell of a lot of it. You boys get on back to your weeding.
The black dog had reached the buggy and now came trotting back alongside it, tail wagging vigorously.
You stupid damn dog.
Huey remounted the bronc, holding the rein up tight. He had no intention of putting on a free show of riding skill for Fat Gervin, a man who didn't know how to appreciate true ability.
Whoa!
Fat reined the gray buggy horses to a stop and sat looking across the waving green feed. He pointed his round little chin toward Cotton.
What kind of a rig do you call that?
That is a bank beater. That little contraption is one of the things that's going to beat you, Fat. We've got that feed crop as good as made. Unless you can stir up a hailstorm or something pretty soon.
You got some yearlings to sell too, ain't you?
They're as good as sold already. Walter says him and old man Thomas made an agreement back in the spring.
Did he get anything written down on paper?
Huey began to feel a touch of doubt.
You don't need anything on paper in this country. They shook hands.
No, that's not enough anymore. Old man Thomas can't help you. He can't even help himself. He's overdue on some notes he owes us. We got him tied up to where he can't buy smoking tobacco, much less some nester's yearlings.
Huey swallowed, then caught hold, trying to keep Fat from seeing his misgivings.
Well, too bad about the old man, but we'll sell him to somebody else.
Who?
I don't know. Somebody.
There ain't anybody this side of Midland will buy your cattle, and there ain't anybody there who'll come this far to buy them from you. You'll have to drive them all the way to town.
Fat began to smile, but the smile carried a touch of frost.
That feed you're so puffed up about. Who are you gonna sell it to?
No problem there. Walter's been selling it to ranchers around here for years.
You talked to any of them lately?
The chill touched Huey somewhere down below his belt buckle.
No.
Then I wouldn't count my chickens till you see them pop out of the shell.
Gervin flipped the reins and brought the buggy team around in a long circle, then sent them into a trot on the way back toward town. The black dog followed him a long way before giving up and limping back, its affections unrequited. Worry gnawed at Huey's belly all the way to the house. He drank a quick cup of coffee and left his dinner untouched on the back of the wood stove while Eve complained about cooking for nothing. He staked the bronc, saddled Biscuit, and rode out in a hurry. Late in the afternoon, he came to a ranch house not far back up from the Pecos River. He found the rancher milking a Jersey cow to feed a growing flock of youngsters. Huey waved and reined up Biscuit. He tied Biscuit to a fence and entered the cow pen, watching his feet. He shook hands, getting his right hand wet with milk.
Howdy, Willis. I noticed coming in that your feet stack's almost fed up.
The rancher nodded, glancing unnecessarily in that direction.
Yeah, about time for new crops start coming off.
Well, that's what I come to talk to you about. We'll be cutting Walter's pretty soon. You'll be needing about the same as last year, won't you?
The rancher shook his head and looked away.
Yeah, matter of fact, Huey, I won't. Already got my feed bought. Contracted, anyway.
Somehow Huey knew it all the way over here, but it hit him in the stomach anyway.
Mind if I ask who sold it to you?
Yeah, it's Fat Gervin. Came by and contracted to furnish all I need and do it a little under the Midland market.
Under the market? But him and old CC, they don't raise any feed. They're always buying. How can he sell cheaper than the market?
Nah, I don't know, but he done it. Times like these, Huey, man, takes the savings where he can find them. There ain't no loose money floating around, you know.
I'm beginning to know.
Huey reached up for Biscuit's mane and the saddle horn.
You know anybody else upriver who might want some feed?
Well, I understand that Fat pretty well made the rounds. I think he's sold just about everybody.
Nice to see you, Willis. You take care of them kids now.
Doing the best I can. Seems like I've been taking too good a care of my wife.
Huey rode away with his shoulders drawn in. He'd visit some more ranches tomorrow, but he already sensed what the outcome would be. A dark and ugly suspicion came to him. Fat Gervin was doing this to box him in. Worse, he was probably figuring on the Callaway feed to meet some of his contract obligations after he took over the place.
I'll burn it first.
He didn't get in till after dark. He nibbled a little at the cold leftovers and filled up on black coffee. Eve asked what was eating at him, but he gave her no answer. Next day, keeping his mission from Eve, he visited a couple more ranches. As he'd expected, Fat Gervin had been there a few days ahead of him. Huey knew of a certainty now. They had a crop of feed almost made, and there wasn't a soul in the Upton City country to sell it to. On Sunday morning, while Eve sought salvation in church and, in taking the boys with her, allowed the weeds a day of grace, Huey was out on his daily rounds, seeking after screwworms to kill. In the afternoon, he pursued romance in his own uncertain fashion. He tied some work into it, however. He rode to the Laudermilk place on one of the broncs he was breaking for Alvin. This served the double purpose of training and transportation. It was an efficiency of which Eve could approve. The Laudermilk menagerie was out in force, blissfully unaware of the sacredness of the Sabbath. The peafowl momentarily put Huey in some jeopardy of a hard fall from the skittish bronc. But Huey was prepared for the sight if the bronc wasn't, and he held the little sorrel down to a couple of short crow hops. He had no intention of ruining the last dress-up shirt he owned. Julio watched from the shed door, waving. He seldom got to town. He had to appreciate whatever small amusements chanced to pass his way. Alvin stepped out onto the porch to investigate the commotion, then walked down the steps to meet Huey. Coming out the yard gate and shutting it behind him, a precaution to protect Cora's flowers from four-footed invasions, he looked the bronc over with a discerning eye as Huey reined the animal to a halt.
The bronc looks better than you do.
Huey's good white shirt only accentuated the sun-browned face, the wind-chapped lips.
Well, maybe he ain't been working as hard.
You ought to take better care of yourself.
He reached out to try and touch the bronc on the shoulder. It pulled back, eyes wide enough to show the whites.
I expect you're about through with a bunch of broncs.
I'll be bringing them home in a few days to swap you for some more.
Alvin frowned and tried again to touch the bronc. He managed it this time, though the sorrel was not wholly in favor.
It'd be a lot easier on you if you'd come over here and ride him. Be easier on Walter's grass, too.
I gotta be there and watch after things. Gotta hunt screwworms every day, gotta keep them boys working.
Good God, you sound more like a daddy than an uncle. They probably liked you better when you was just Uncle Huey.
Well, they'll like me a lot less if they lose the roof from over their heads.
Alvin's frown sank deeper. He studied Huey as carefully as he had studied the bronc.
It don't fit on you, Huey. You're trying to make yourself into somebody you're not.
You got any better ideas?
Alvin had no answer for that.
I don't reckon you need to buy any feed, do you, Alvin?
No. No matter of fact, my crop's coming up so good I'm liable to have a little more than I need. Now, would you believe Fat Gervin came by here a few days ago and offered to buy any extra that I find I've got?
I'd believe it.
Spring Renfro appeared on the porch. Her eyes met Huey's and came alive with joy. Huey's tired back straightened. A smile flirted with his leathery face, but it didn't quite come alive. Alvin looked from one to the other, his brow still twisted.
I believe I'll go on down to the barn and see what Julio's up to. You come on down later if you've a mind to, Huey.
Alvin waited for a response, but received none. He shrugged and walked toward the corrals. Huey stepped up onto the porch, glanced over his shoulder to be sure Alvin wasn't watching, then opened his arms for Spring. She came to him, smiling, saying nothing, needing to say nothing. They held each other in a long, warm silence. She brought him a measure of comfort he badly needed.
I've missed you. A week can be a long time.
Well, there's been a lot of work to do.
She stepped back to arm's length and looked him over carefully, critically.
You don't feel well, Huey.
How can you tell the way I feel?
It shows in your eyes. Your face. You're drawn, Huey. You're not eating enough. I don't think you're sleeping.
Well, I'm all right. Just got a lot on my mind right now, is all.
She ran her fingers gently through his hair.
The gray seems to be showing a little more. Taking responsibility is one thing, but you're letting responsibility take you, and that is something else.
I've worked hard a lot in my life. It's never hurt me.
It's not the work. It's what goes on up there.
Spring gently tapped his forehead with her finger.
I'm not sure you know how to handle it.
I've never had a job of work yet that I couldn't handle.
Holding hands, they walked to the porch swing and sat down close together. The touch of her body against his was both bliss and pain. Bliss in that it felt so good. Pain in that he wanted to do so much more, couldn't or wouldn't. Huey heard the squeak of the wheelchair making its way slowly across the parlor floor and the bump as it stopped inside the screen door.
Oh, it's just that Huey Calloway again bothering our Spring. If I was her, I'd tie a dead cat to him and run him off.
Spring looked at Huey, her eyes sparkling with laughter.
Come here, Mother. I want you to hold this yarn for me.
Somebody ought to be out there watching him. That kind will take advantage of a woman every time.
Mother,
it's an awful thing to be a woman. We yield up so much and receive so little in return.
Mother, you come here.
I'm coming.
The chair squeaked again as the old lady reluctantly retreated deeper into the house.
They ever hang me, I hope they send that old lady an invitation. It'll be a high point of her life.
She's just worried about my welfare.
Yeah, that's for me to do.
I'm not your responsibility yet. Right now, I'm afraid you have more worries than you know what to do with.
He stared morosely toward the low blue mountains, the flat-top desert mountains of the Trans-Pecos.
I've never had it like this before. I've worked hard on plenty of jobs, but I always knew I could walk off and leave it any time I take the notion. That made it easy. This time, I can't ride off. It's like I was chained to a post.
Most men are chained to some kind of post. Women, too.
I just started kind of late. I'm like an old dog trying to learn a new trick and falling back on my tail. I growl an awful lot and learn damn little.
Have faith in yourself, Huey.
Spring picked up his rough hand and pressed it against her lips. She looked at him so directly and without reservation that he felt his face warming. He tried to think of something to say, but nothing came. Romance had been sadly neglected on his part.
With all you've had to do, I don't suppose you've had a chance to see about making a deal on the Barcroft place?
He stared at his hands, his eyes troubled.
Spring, I've been wondering how to tell you. Maybe we'd better not figure on that place for a while. It'll take everything I've got, everything I can get, to keep CC and Fat from taking that place.
I can help. It's hard to save much out of a school teacher's salary, but I've managed. I have a little money set aside. We could put it down on the Barcroft claim just to hold it.
Use your money? If we get married, it's my place to do the paying, not yours. A man don't take a woman's money.
That's old-fashioned. In a lot of the world, a bride brings a dowry into the marriage.
Well, we're living in this part of the world, and here it's up to me.
He went home a little earlier than usual from his Sunday courting, for a dark mood had settled over him, and he feared it might be contagious. To his surprise, he saw Walter sitting up in the front of the house, his legs stretched out straight in front of him in the cast, a pair of crutches resting against his hip. They were homemade. Cotton's doing. Huey went to the barn and unsaddled, then came back to stand and gaze upon his brother. Walter's face was pale from the long confinement. He had never been one to carry any excess flesh, and he was even thinner than usual now. But Huey saw pleasure in his brother's eyes at being able to get outside and see the world without a ceiling over it. Huey tried to pretend a cheerfulness he couldn't feel.
I got some broncs that need riding if you feel up to it.
Ask me again tomorrow.
You sure it's safe for you to be getting out?
I've been going crazy lying in there where I can't see anything. I never knew how pretty an old barn could be, or even a milk house, or several broncs staked out on a flat.
Walter turned his head in the direction of the fields, though we couldn't see them from here.
How's the feed looking, Huey?
Fine. It'll be ready to cut pretty soon now.
You'll need to be going around to the ranchers and telling them. We got to start pulling the money together.
Huey couldn't tell him the truth.
I'll, do it, Walter. First chance I get.
Supper!
Huey helped Walter get the crutches under his arms and pulled to his good foot. Walter moved awkwardly. It'd be some time yet before he could do much for himself. Huey hung back, brooding.
Supper, Huey!
Huey sat down at the table but found the food tasteless. Eve watched him.
Huey, are things all right between you and Spring?
Sure, everything's fine.
Huey pushed to his feet and slid his chair back.
If you all will pardon me, I think I'll go outside and have me a smoke.
Huey sat down in the chair Walter had vacated. Down by the grove, he saw several freight wagons, the teamsters unhitching. One of them he could tell was Blue Hannigan. Somehow Huey welcomed the company. He couldn't talk to anyone in the family about his problem. Maybe he could talk about it to Hannigan. Sharing it with somebody might make it easier. Presently, Hannigan and a couple of other men started walking toward the windmill, leading their horses and mules. Huey moved out to the mill and stood with his shoulder against the tower.
Howdy, Huey.
Blue stopped to study him a minute.
You look like you've been run over by a gut wagon.
Huey found a touch of dark humor in that and almost smiled.
Yeah, you could say that in a way. I've been run over by Fat Gervin.
Hannigan watered his teams, and that came ahead of pleasant conversation or food or anything else where the man's livelihood depended upon his animals.
Come on down to the camp, Huey, if you've a mind to. We got a pot of coffee started. I expect you've already had your supper.
Huey gladly walked down to the grove with the muscular, begrimed teamster. He helped him to take the rest of the harness off and tie the mules in their places alongside the wagons, then tie the morals of feed over their heads. That done, Hannigan fetched a pair of cups, poured coffee, then sat down for a few minutes of comfort on the heavy wagon tongue.
Now then, Huey, what's that fat son of a bitch done to you?
Huey squatted on his heels and gritted his teeth. In a way, he hated to tell. He felt somehow belittled that he could ever be in the position where another man could take such an advantage of him. But he told Hannigan the whole thing.
I don't know which way to turn, Blue. We can do something or other with the yearlings. Midland's a long ways to drive a little bunch of cattle, but we can do it. We can ship them to Fort Worth's dockyards if we have to. But that feed, that's what's got into my craw. If we can't sell the feed, we just won't have the money to pay off that note. We can't go hauling feed all over the country to try to sell it. The freight would eat it up.
Blue Hannigan scowled. When he did that, his face somehow reminded Huey of a storm boiling up, about to let loose thunder and fire. Hannigan seemed to withdraw into himself a little while, thinking. At last, his expression cleared.
It finally makes sense, Huey. I haven't been able to figure out what he was up to, but now I see.
See what?
Fat hired him an agent in Midland to go out visiting farmers and try to tie up all the feed they're raising. I didn't understand it because him and CC never bought that much feed before, and not for their own use. Fat's doing it just to nail you up in a box, Huey.
Well, he's done it.
Not yet. Maybe you can crawl out before that lid is hammered shut.
Hannigan got some coffee grounds in his mouth.
He's a crafty devil, but you can outcraft him.
I don't see how.
That agent is buying from anybody who will sell to him. He'll buy from me if I can tell him I can line him up with some feed. He don't have to know where I got it. You and the boys, you get that feed cut as soon as it's ready. I'll get a bunch of the mule skinners together and their wagons, and we'll haul that stuff to Midland for you.
That's a long haul, Blue. Time we pay the freight.
Well, there ain't gonna be no freight. Half the time we're empty on the trip to Midland anyway. Most of our hauling is out from there, not in.
I wouldn't ask it of you. Neither would Walter.
You ain't asking, I'm telling. All of us boys, we like Walter and we owe him. You think everybody in the county lets us water our teams without paying for it? Hell no, they don't. And if Fat Gervin gets control of this place, you can damn well bet he'll charge for water and grass both.
Huey could see some logic in that, enough to ease his conscience.
This country ain't got so many good people in it that it can afford to lose a family like the Callaways. You damn right we'll do it for you, and be tickled to get the chance. We gotta keep it quiet. We gotta slip up on their blind side or they'll fly the nest.
There won't nobody know but me and you and whoever you tell.
For a long time now, a stifling, heavy weight had been building on Huey's shoulders. Part of it fell away. The evening had just turned dark, but he could see daylight.
Blue Hannigan, if you was a woman, I'd kiss you.
If I was a woman, I'd be damned if I'd let you.
Huey couldn't afford to tell the family yet for fear the plan might somehow leak out. Besides, none of them knew of the block that Fat had thrown in their way. Huey had kept that to himself. In the days ahead, he worked at tying up all the loose ends. In the course of riding, looking for screwworm cases, he started picking up the yearlings that were due for sale and hazing them to the milk cow pasture. He began trying to put the finishing touches on the current set of Laudermilk Bronx. Tommy was getting to be a problem there. He was too eager and too reckless.
Stay out from behind that horse. He'll kick you plumb into next Saturday.
Tommy had been too close, but he didn't recognize it.
Why don't you let me ride this one, Uncle Huey? He's not so tough.
You're too young to be riding Bronx like this.
I'm older than you was when you started. You've told me many a time. Spinner James is riding Bronx already, and he's a year younger than I am.
One broken leg in this family is enough.
But Huey could tell by Tommy's actions that he had all the makings of a good cowboy. There wouldn't be any holding him back much longer. The boys were growing up and getting away from him while he stood there and watched them. The day came when Huey knew the feed was ready to cut. He took his string of Bronx to Alvin Laudermilk and pronounced them broken. He gladly accepted the pay which Alvin counted out for him, including a few dollars in extra bonus, which Alvin said he felt was due for the speed and thoroughness of the job.
And now, Alvin, could I ask you for the barry of your row binder?
Alvin's own feed was probably about ready to cut, but he didn't have a big note falling due at the bank.
You can have it on one condition. I got a couple of green broke workhorses that sure do need the practice. You take them and you can take the binder.
I won't charge you a red cent for the training.